All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in to episode 3 of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. I am your host, Big Red.
And I am Average Ant.
And we're ready to give you some good info today. We're going to, like we said back in week 2, we're going to be going over our award predictions at a little past the three-quarter mark in the MLB. Then we're going to touch a little bit about some WNBA issues going on right now. Pay discrepancy, and then maybe a little update in the WNBA semifinals right now. Yeah. Then we are going to wrap it up with a little talk about Manu Ginobili, the great San Antonio Spur that retired recently.
All right, so I guess we'll get us started and just dive straight into the NL Cy Young. To me, this is probably the award I debated with myself most on who I wanted to pick. There's a few guys that you could give it to, and the guy that I pick is Jacob DeGrom, and it kind of took me a while to come to that conclusion. Like, his numbers are obviously great, outstanding, untouchable pretty much. But it's the wins, like the win column is what's really holding me back. And it kind of reminds me of the Felix year when Felix won it. I mean, I guess it's not his fault that the Mets are completely garbage and can't get him wins. But at the same time, I feel like if you are that type of Cy Young pitcher, you should be able to pull through and get wins. But then what ultimately led me to choose him as my Cy Young award winner, at least up to this point, is the fact that his ERA is sub 2, I believe. If not, it's still around 2.
It's a 1.68.
Yeah. So if you're only allowing 1.68 runs every 9 innings or whatever it is. I'm not exactly sure how ERA works, but
that is how it works.
There's no excuse why your team shouldn't be giving you at least 2. So so I'm going with Jacob DeGrom for NL Cy Young. Who you got?
You hit the nail on the head saying this one was probably the most debated. I mean, the only other one that's that close for me is maybe AL Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
But I, honestly, the Cy Young's crazy. You got in my corner, you got 3 guys. There's Max Scherzer, Jacob DeGrom, and Aaron Nola. DeGrom, on paper, dude's been healthy pretty much all season. He's second in the NL with 182 innings pitched. Like you said, he has a sparkling 1.68 ERA. And he's just been dominant. He's got 224 strikeouts, which is number 2 in the league. The big issue, though, for me is wins. I know it sucks, and you hate to sit there and be like, wins is like, because wins is just, it's BS stat. It sucks. But I mean, at the same time, if you're not winning for your ball club, that means you're going out there and pitching well, but not well enough to win.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an intangible. And don't get me wrong, I've been a Mariners fan my whole life, so I'm sitting here watching Felix lose 1-0 and 2-1, and like, yes, I feel your pain, Jacob DeGrom. I feel your pain, Mets fans that want him to win Cy Young, but that's just not how the Cy Youngs work. I mean, it's even if you don't win a lot of games, in my opinion, the way the voting goes is your team needs to be at least some way decent, or you need to some way compete to show that you being that good is really helping the team and proving you're the best pitcher in the league. And so because of that, even though his numbers are fantastic and ERA really jumps off the page at you, ERA is the only thing that really blows you away. Max Scherzer leads the league in wins, innings pitched. He's number 2 in ERA at 2.22. Now, yes, that is a much higher than DeGrom's 1.68, but that's the only thing DeGrom really has him in. Scherzer leads in strikeouts by 25, and his WHIP is a 0.88, which is walks plus hits per inning. So Scherzer is allowing significantly less than one base runner per inning, essentially. And DeGrom, he's right there. He's at, he's, I believe his whip's around like 0.98, which is still less than one per inning. But I, to me, it's just across the board. Max Scherzer, as close as this race is, he has the better numbers slightly. I don't know how the rest of the season is going to play out, but these are predictions.
Yeah.
Right now, sure. He slightly has the better numbers, and the Nationals are a significantly better team, even though they're kind of slipping out of the playoff race themselves. Yeah. Then Max Scherzer's got to be my Cy Young. The only way I see him losing it is voters fatigue, I guess.
Yeah, that was big. I definitely felt that too.
Yeah, and Aaron Nola is another guy that's up there, and he's on a better team. The Phillies might actually make the playoffs, but where Nola hurts big time is he's 10 innings less than DeGrom and 14 innings less than Scherzer. He's got 15 wins, and he's got a very, very good ERA. It actually might even be below Scherzer's. I might have misspoke earlier. But the other thing that's huge is he's only got 177 strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
That's strikeouts are huge in today's game, especially with all the stats. Today. Yeah. And so to me, Nola's out. It's got to be Scherzer.
Yeah. So I was going back and forth with myself a lot, and I wanted to choose Scherzer. Like you said, voters fatigue. That's not necessarily the deciding factor for me, but it plays a huge part. It gets kind of boring, I guess, watching the same dude win the same award every year. And that definitely is more emphasized in like basketball and stuff with the MVP. But I just think people in general like to see different people winning awards and stuff. And I don't know, Jacob DeGrom is just dominant. His ERA is phenomenal. His strikeouts are up there. I mean, I like Scherzer. I don't know why I can't say his name. But yeah, man, I just think DeGrom, if the season ended today, should have it. Like, these are predictions, like you said, so things can play out a lot differently.
Yeah, DeGrom could go... Shoot, DeGrom wins 5 or 6 more games, I think that's around how many starts he might have left, maybe 4 or 5. But, I mean, then that puts him in the range of guys that have won with very low win totals.
Yeah.
I think Zach Greinke was 12, Felix was 13. So if he gets up there in the low teens, he's got a shot. But I still just think Scherzer's taking it.
Yeah. Agree to disagree on that, I guess.
Right on.
I mean, I don't feel too strongly on that part, so I guess we'll move towards AL Cy Young. Who do you got?
For me, there are a lot of good candidates in the AL. I think it's kind of a two-horse race. Maybe not even, in my opinion, it's not even really. I think a lot of people keep pulling for Chris Sale because of the crazy strikeout numbers he puts up and everything, but he's hurt again, or I'm not sure if he's back or not, but regardless, he's way behind in innings. I think he's almost 40 or 50 innings behind my guy, which is Justin Verlander.
Okay.
Justin Verlander is a horse. I mean, that dude is pitching every game for the Houston Astros, one of the best teams in baseball. He's number one in strikeouts at 240. He's fourth in ERA at a 2.78. His whip, walks plus hits per innings, we talked about earlier, is at a .95. Batting average against is .209, which is fifth in the league. He's only got 13 wins, another thing, but I mean, he's on the Astros. You got to expect he's going to win at least 3 or 4 more games. From there, he's number two in innings pitched at 181. And to me, Justin Verlander is just the guy. I think about the best pitchers in the game right now. You think of Garrett Cole, Luis Severino, Chris Sale, Corey Kluber. But to me, kind of like how I picked Max Scherzer because he's got the across-the-board numbers, Justin Verlander's don't necessarily jump out at you quite like Scherzer's, but I think he has a lot more competition league-wide as opposed to just a few guys. And so for me and those reasons, I got Justin Verlander taking it home.
Yeah, I mean, I like Verlander at taking it away. pretty much the whole Astros rotation is up for consideration for this, which is kind of ridiculous. But I would say it's not, I guess this my decision didn't necessarily come down to who I want to win it. It's more of who I think will win it. And I think Chris Sale will end up winning it just because he's been up there for he's been up there in voting year after year after year and has never got one. So I think not necessarily a pity award since, I mean, obviously he's still like one of the best pitchers in the league. But I think this year will be the year that he finally gets it. But yeah, like you said, he has been on the DL a lot, and that's definitely, I feel like that's the one thing holding him back from running away with it. But if he comes back healthy for the rest of the season and just builds on what he's already done, I think he'll definitely get it.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't agree. I for me, if I had to pick a guy that not a gut reaction pick, I would go with Corey Kluber more than I would Chris Sale. But yeah, I mean, that's just probably a personal thing I got against Chris Sale. I don't know, man. It's just like the dude's up there every year, but he never wins it. And there's there are some years I feel like he should win it, I guess. But like, to me, it's kind of like, all right, dude, like, you're a really good pitcher, but you can't get that Cy Young. So like, what's that saying? And I don't think this is going to be the year he gets it, but I mean, he is Chris Sale. Dude puts up crazy numbers every year. I can't believe he didn't win it last year with 300 plus strikeouts.
Yeah. Maybe he just needs to cut up some more jerseys, I guess.
Something, dude. All right, let's bounce over to the Managers of the Year, the most exciting awards that everyone cares about the most. starting over in the AL this time. This one's kind of tough because it really comes down to two guys and two things for me. It's either Bob Melvin on the of the Oakland A's or it's Scott Service of the Seattle Mariners. And I mean, my reasoning why it's either one of those two or which one it's going to be is pretty cut and dry. It's if the Mariners make the playoffs, it's got to be Scott Service for me to take a team out of a drought like they're in from the playoffs, especially now that he's had to battle through the adversity of having the A's storm back. But if the Mariners don't make the playoffs, I've got to give it to Bob Melvin. I mean, they came out of nowhere. Honestly, even if the Mariners do make the playoffs, you have to assume the A's either fell off or they overtook maybe the Astros or the Yankees slumped real bad. I don't know, but it's one of those things. And I have a feeling if Seattle makes it, the A's may not. If they do, I think Bob Melvin still wins the award. Even though I really want Scott Service to win it. But I think that Bob Melvin and the Moneyball deal Billy Beane has going down and the reputation that Oakland has is going to make it really hard for the guy I really want, Scott Service, to win it. But I am a Mariners fan, so it's biased as hell. But
yeah, no, I'd pretty much feel 100% same way as you. It's definitely going to come down to whoever grabs that wild card spot. And I sit up every night staring at my ceiling, hoping it's the Mariners, but I don't know. I really hope it's the Mariners. Scott Service deserves it. He deserves it, whether they make it or not, but so does Bob Melvin. So it's definitely the determining factor is who gets a wild card spot. And unfortunately for us, the Mariners will probably find a way to choke that way.
Unfortunately. I would really love for the Mariners to come storming back, and I think the only way they get in, honestly, now, in my opinion, is if they can find some way to scratch and claw past the A's.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like,
yeah,
they're going after each other. So we'll move towards NL Manager of the Year. Who do you got for that?
For me, it is... it's pretty decisive for me. There's one other guy, I guess it could be. There's a few other good candidates. I mean, the Diamondbacks manager and Bud Black on the Rockies and whoever is managing the Phillies. But my guy is Brian Snitker on the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the turnaround the Braves have had is incredible.
Yeah.
They are three or four games up on the Phillies right now in their division. The Nationals are all the way down at 67-67. So I mean it's got the Braves were garbage, worst team in baseball last year.
Yeah.
And to be where they're at now, like, just snap your fingers like that. I mean, it's crazy. And these awards, they really like to give them to teams that get turned around. It doesn't really even matter the sport. Like, you turn a team around, you have a big chance of winning it. Maybe not so much in the NBA, as it's really a lot of times it goes to the coach with the most wins.
Yeah, on the best team. Yeah.
But in NFL and NBA, or not NBA, MLB, it's a lot of times it's the coaches that turn the franchise around, and I think that's exactly what the Braves manager Snitker has done.
Yeah, kind of anticlimactic that we've agreed on the last few ones, because I feel the exact same way. I guess if the Phillies can catch the Braves and pass them, then I guess it would go to Gabe Kapler, the manager of the Phillies. If that doesn't happen, then I think Brian Snitker, or however you pronounce that, it's a bunch of weird letters. he's definitely the go-to, whatever, however you want to say it.
Favorite.
Yeah, favorite. Thank you. But if Braves take the division, he's definitely getting it. Even if they don't take the division, he still has a pretty healthy chance of getting it.
Yeah. I agree. Like you said, it's like climactic. But there's just not really, I mean, you look at the NL and it's just kind of a clump of mediocrity. I mean, they're all good teams, don't get me wrong, but I mean, they're all, if you compare them to the AL, the Mariners would be leading any division in the NL right now.
Yeah. Like, no, it's definitely like the West versus East.
Yeah. And it's, from that standpoint, it's like, you look at the one team that stepped up a little bit more than the rest of the mountain, and it's the Braves. And
yeah,
so it's
for sure.
It's got to be Snitker's a favorite right now.
All right, so next we got Rookie of the Year. So you could choose if you want to do AL or NL first. You can have
Let's do NL, because I think the AL is going to, we can debate a little bit more.
All right, for sure. All right, so who you got?
For Rookie of the Year in the National League, real tough race again. I think if I'm going purely off instincts of who I actually think is going to win, it's going to be Ronald Acuna. Dude is hitting .291 with 21 bombs, 47 RBIs, 11 stolen bases, and a .916 OPS as a rookie, and about 320 ABs. And so, I mean, it's... That's crazy numbers for a rookie. And I mean, that 291 and 21 bombs, I mean, you're taking that out of a guy you pay $25 million.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. And I mean, he's a rookie, and I think he's going to win because of popular demand. Now, there's another guy in Washington, Juan Soto, that is putting up very similar numbers. He's hitting .292, 16 homers, 50 RBIs, only 2 stolen bases, but he's got a higher OPS at .928. So you could argue his season is right on par with Acuna's. I think Acuna's got a little more power numbers, which boosts his slugging, but Juan Soto takes a lot more walks, so it boosts his on-base percentage. I think down the line, Juan Soto is going to end up being the better, more consistent player, but I think this year it's just got to be Ronald Acuna.
Yeah, Ronald Acuna is definitely the sexy pick for NL Rookie of the Year, especially with the Braves turning it around. They're leading their division, which is also the division the Nationals are in. And because of that, I think Ronald Acuna definitely has like the Aaron Judge effect that Aaron Judge had last year. Obviously, not as good, but he's already the face of the Braves in his rookie season. So, I mean, because of that, he kind of has to win NL Rookie of the Year. Like you said, Juan Soto will most likely have a more steady, consistent career. But Ronald Acuna is, I guess I would compare not necessarily him as a person or whatever, but his appeal to like someone like Javi Baez. He's a showstopper. Shout out to Shawn Michaels. He's I don't know, he's just he puts fans in the seats while also making the team a lot better. So I definitely agree with you on that one.
Yeah, I agree. Acuña, I like what you said, the sexy pick, and I mean that's kind of just the way it is, and I think Juan Soto would really have to come on strong with some power numbers here at the end to overtake Acuña. But if he did that, his OPS would be near 1,000, and you'd consider this fool for the MVP. But I don't think it happens. I think Acuña takes this award.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so the very last... Oh, no, we're moving on to...
AL, right?
Yeah, we still got AL. I forgot because it's such a stupid pick. So, AL. We kind of talked a little bit about this prior to the show. It's kind of one guy because of the sexy pick, just like in the last one. But there's another guy, a bit of a dark horse that I really like, that I think should win it.
Mm-hmm.
And so because that, I'm using go with him as my pick. That's Miguel Andujar on the New York Yankees, teammate of Gleyber Torres, the other big rookie of the year candidate, probably the sexy pick. He was the more hyped up prospect coming in. He's hitting .281 with 21 homers and an .855 OPS, Torres is, which are excellent numbers, especially for a rookie. And he was a big hype prospect, and so I think a lot of the media attention's on him. But Andujar, my guy, is hitting .292 with the same OPS, .855. He's got 22 home runs. And I mean, I think maybe it's because he's the underdog, but that's who I want to win it, and that's my pick. But I mean, the numbers between the two are virtually identical, so it's really, it'll come down to whoever gets hot the last month of the season, which is crazy, especially when you think these fools are on the same team.
For real. Must be nice to be a Yankees fan or be on the Yankees or just live in the state of New York, I guess, unless you're a Mets fan. But I'm viewing the other side of this. I'm going with the sexier pick in Gleyber Torres. Like I said with Ronald Acuna, I mean, even though he's teammates with Aaron Judge, he still has the Aaron Judge type of effect on a team. I mean, obviously not as significant, but he definitely can evolve into the face of the New York Yankees. And to me, that's a rookie that can be the face of a franchise as prestigious as the Yankees. Definitely deserves Rookie of the Year. And I mean, obviously, like you said, he's a dark horse, but he also deserves Rookie of the Year. But I'm definitely going with Gleyber just because he's just more recognizable. He's like branded, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And more fans know about him. The voters will probably get wrapped up more in the hype train. And I just feel like he'll run away with the award. Unless, obviously, he slumps a lot towards the back end of the season. But, I mean, anything can happen.
Yeah, and that's true. But these are predictions. Maybe I'm just picking it hard just to disagree with you a little bit. they are putting up great numbers. I do kind of agree with you. Torres, like I even said, he's more hyped up. And it'll be real tough for Andujar to snatch it from him, but I do believe he has the numbers to do it. We'll move on to the last piece, the American League and National League MVPs. I know it's what you're all waiting for. It's always the biggest award. So, Ant, where you want to start, AL, NL?
We'll go AL first. So, first, top of the list is always Mike Trout.
Yep.
He'll probably be on the top of the list until the day he retires for AL MVP. He's having probably one of his best seasons that he's ever had, which is crazy considering he won the MVP last year. I'm thinking a little voter fatigue is going to set in. So I'm going with Mookie Betts. It's definitely, I hate that I've said it's a sexy pick so many times already, but it's definitely a sexy pick. It's something different. Like, though I might disagree with it that Mike Trout doesn't really like market himself, like, I don't think that's a problem, but it's something that's setting Mookie apart from him. Like, people that aren't necessarily baseball fans know who Mookie Betts is. Like, he's just a recognizable face. He's got swag. He's got all that. And more importantly, he has all the stats to back it up, too. He's top of the league in WAR. I mean, not leading it, but he's up there. Hits for average, power, steals bases, defense, locks it down. Well, I mean, obviously Mike Trout does all that too, but I'm definitely feeling Mookie on this. What are you thinking on this?
So I can back you up with some numbers here.
Yeah.
I'm big into Mookie Betts for MVP this year. Yes, Mike Trout. Mike Trout is the LeBron James of baseball. Mm-hmm. It's the dude's what, 4 or 5 years in or whatever, 3 or 4 years in, and that's already established. He, as long as he's healthy, is going to be what LeBron James is to the NBA. He's going to be the best player in the league.
Yeah, for sure.
He just is. But with that being said, I don't know if it's because of the games that Trout's missed or anything. And yes, you even said it. He's putting up arguably the best season of his already ridiculously great career.
Nah, that's crazy.
And so, well, if the best player in the league's putting up the best season he's ever had, why is he not winning the MVP? And it is, I think part of it is voters fatigue, but another piece of it is, Mookie Betts is having equally, if not a greater season than Mike Trout, which is insane. I don't have the defensive numbers on Trout, but Mookie Betts has 11 defensive runs saved for the Red Sox this year, which is best in the AL, if not the league. You're talking his WAR is right up there. His is at a 7.8 wins against replacement. Mike Trout's is at a 7.6. And Jose Ramirez is actually tops with a 7.9. Jose Ramirez, dark horse candidate. I do love what Jose Ramirez does for the Cleveland Indians every time out there. It's got to be Mookie Betts. You're talking about him leading, him being great in all these different areas. How about first in average at 342? Eighth in homers at 29. First in runs at 109, fifth in stolen bases at 26, second in on-base percentage at 430, second in slugging at 643. He's number two in the league with a 1,073 OPS. That is across the board numbers. To me, that is what Max Scherzer has done in the National League for the Cy Young in a close race there, too. The NL Cy Young and AL MVP are probably the closest just because of the level of talent that's there in the top three or four. But Mookie Betts has done that exact across the board numbers, even as good or better than Scherzer has in the NL. And I think that because Mike Trout's won it before and because the Angels aren't making the playoffs, Mookie Betts is the American League MVP.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely agree with you 100%. And also, free Mike Trout. We got to get him out of Anaheim or LA. Yeah,
so let's get him somewhere like the Mariners or something.
Yeah. Pretty much anywhere else.
Except the Yankees, bro.
But yeah, so I guess that brings us to our last award, which is the NL MVP. So I'll let you kick that one off.
National League MVP is tough for me. I kind of spoke to a little bit of the mediocrity in the NL earlier, and I don't think that extends to the individual players, but a lot of the MVP award is based on like a team's doing well and succeeding. My top guys right now are Freddie Freeman and Nolan Arenado. I think numbers wise, to me, Nolan Arenado should win the MVP award. He's fourth in RBIs, ninth in average, sixth in runs, second in homers at 31. OPS is number two at 947, and he's number two in WAR at a 4.9, and the only guy ahead of him is Matt Carpenter. Freddie Freeman, though, is on the winning team, the better team in the Braves that's going to make the playoffs, and he's putting up good numbers of his own. I mean, he's fourth in average. He's hitting 311, better than Arenado. The big thing for me is Freddie Freeman doesn't have a great power number. He's only got 20 home runs. He doesn't have a ton of RBIs. I mean, he does, but he's not on the level of Arenado. And for that reason, to me, Freddie Freeman isn't like contributing on like a superstar level, even though his team is doing well. And for that reason, I think Arenado wins it just because that dude's having an excellent season.
Yeah, so coming into the season, Nolan was definitely my pick to win the MVP. And right now, like realistically, there's about like six or seven guys, maybe even eight, that are in consideration for the NL MVP, which is, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I guess I'm going to have to disagree with you and go with Freddie Freeman. Okay. I've gone with the sexier, more eye-opening pick the last few awards, so I just think Freddie Freeman deserves it. He's super low key. He reminds me a lot of Mike Trout, not play style wise, but like personality wise. Like he just goes and grinds. And what's also separating it for me is that the Rockies aren't as good as the Braves, and especially if the Braves push forward this season and separate themselves even more in the NL East, and Freddie Freeman plays a big part in that, then I definitely feel like it would go to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, his power numbers aren't as good. They definitely fell off a lot. They're, I think he was at, like, what, like 16, 18 home runs at the All-Star break?
Somewhere around there. He was close. I was surprised to see he's only at 20 home runs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised to see that, too. He's definitely cooled off a bit. But I feel like he'll get hot during the stretch and add maybe like 5 to 7 more home runs maybe. And I feel like that'll be enough to give him the MVP.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to come down to the way the season unfolds at the end. I mean, if Arenado stays hot and pulls his numbers even closer to leading in the leagues, or in the different categories in the league, then he's still my pick. But if Freddie Freeman gets hot and surges the Braves to the playoffs, that'll be too much for good numbers out of a bad team to overcome.
Yeah. All right, so let's move into our next topic, which is the WNBA pay problem. I guess I'd say the pay problem.
Pay discrepancies.
So, it's been a lot of stuff on Twitter and social media and stuff with these WNBA players, specifically like Skylar Diggins and Brittany Griner, saying they don't get paid like the men do and it's unfair and stuff. And I put out this tweet, I think it was yesterday, that kind of broke down how I felt about it. That the WNBA is at the same point in its league history that the NBA was before Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain came along to kind of give it that extra popularization. So it's still, even though the league has been around for 20 years, and at that point the NBA was only around 10 to 15 years, it's still in its developmental stage. And because of that, the WNBA player salaries will obviously be a lot less. So, I mean, with that intro, I obviously have more stuff on it. I'll let you say your piece, Jake.
So I read up a little bit on those comments and things, and like I actually read an article about like fake quotes that were popping up on Instagram and things.
Yeah.
I think Brittany Griner, the quote that you tweeted, in response to was her response to that fake quote.
Yeah.
It was like, I didn't say that, blah, blah, blah. Like the fake quote was, sucking smack on, Tyler Johnson and saying like, yeah. It was like, God, we don't get paid like anything, blah, blah, blah. And you got like bums like Tyler Johnson getting $20 million a year. And so that was the original quote, which is pretty funny. But like, hella rude, obviously.
Yeah.
But that was a fake quote, and she responded and said like, this wasn't me, blah blah blah, like I would never say that about somebody, like I don't need to talk no smack to anybody. And then she's like, to be honest, like, I don't even know who Tyler Johnson is, like, no disrespect. And then she was like, not like, and I would never talk about somebody I don't know. And then she went on to say, like, but, like, while I'm here, I do think that the wages we make are ridiculous and blah, 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 blah. And so to that point, I agree with you that it's their league, where their league history is at. It's not in a position to be paying guys tons and tons of money or paying these women tons and tons of money. But I think it's more than that. I don't think that their popularity is going to skyrocket like the NBA's.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it will grow more popular. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's going to skyrocket into the millions. So her comment saying that they want to be paid more like the men, to me, that's not, first of all, that has nothing to do with their actual issues in their league. And
yeah,
I think you're going to talk a little bit about the CBA and things. And that's where their pay discrepancy comes from. So it has nothing to do with the men getting paid more. They're different industries. Mm-hmm. The NBA brings in an absurd amount more money than the WNBA does. And whether you believe that's fair or not because of a gender idea, it doesn't matter because that's just the way it is. The NBA brings in a significant amount more revenue than the WNBA does, and because of that, they can pay their players more. Now, why women in the WNBA are getting significantly less of the league's revenue, that's a different story, and you can talk a little bit about the CBA from here, Ant.
So I guess I'll start off by saying it's not a gender problem at all. I mean, I don't know why Skylar Diggins is going at Harrison Barnes super hard, calling him a bum and all this, but besides that, the CBA, the way the WNBA CBA is set up is what limits them to only making a max of $110,000 a year. So if you break it down, the NBA brings in about, I think they brought in anywhere from between like $7 to $8 billion this year in revenue. And the players, the way the NBA CBA is set up, the players get 50% of that. And the way the WNBA CBA is set up, they only get something like 24%.
It's less of total revenue. Like 20%.
Yeah.
Like right around 20%.
Yeah. And but they only bring in it's around like 50 to 60 million a year. And so the WNBA players, WNBAPA, is more than likely to opt out of their current CBA this season or after the season, which is something they're able to do. And what I hope happens is that they demand more, a higher percentage of the revenue. I mean, obviously it's not going to be as high as the men at 50%, since I don't even know why I'm saying men, but it's not going to be as high as the NBA, since the NBA brings in billions of dollars, and billions of dollars is a lot different than $50 million. Yeah. But I definitely think the restructuring the CBA to bring around, to give around 30 to 35% would be a huge step forward for the women to get paid more equally. It would give top players a max salary at around like $500,000 to $600,000, which still, I mean, it's a lot more than $110,000. They won't have to go play overseas and stuff. So it'll keep their bodies more healthy. They'll be able to play longer and stuff. And to the point of that, the WNBA isn't going to reach this super high level of popularity. I agree with you on that, because what made the NBA so popular was obviously Bill Russell and the Celtics winning a bunch of championships, but it also had a lot to do with Wilt Chamberlain and his freakish athleticism. Personally, I mean, we don't really have to debate about this at all, but I think he's the greatest athlete to ever live. So, I mean, to have that guy in your league definitely makes the league more popular. And just genetically speaking, you can't really have a woman do that in the WNBA just because of the physical limitations of the way women are built. Like, I'm not trying to be like putting my toxic masculinity out there or anything, because like, I mean, I'm not like that at all, but it's just the way like genetics are. Brittany Griner is an athletic freak for a woman. She's 6'9", can dunk. I feel like that's probably the max that they could get to. I definitely think that as the years go on, that the league will be more filled with players built like that, like the way the NBA is set up now, with dudes like Giannis and Ben Simmons. I definitely think there'll be a lot more players built like Brittany Griner, but have the skill sets of like a Maya Moore. So I think that's what will ultimately popularize the league. But like you said, it won't reach this popularity level that leagues like the NBA are on.
Yeah, I really don't think that's any disrespect to women's basketball or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just the NBA, because of the freakish athletes and the excitement of monster dunks and alley-oops and things like that. I mean, it's just created so much buzz at this point that I think it'd be really hard for the NBA or for the WNBA to catch up to them. I mean, they're definitely not going to catch up to them. I think they could get to a much higher level of popularity.
Yeah, they definitely.
But they're never going to reach this pinnacle that the NBA is at. And whether that's fair or not, I mean, it's just the way that sports in America are set up. And like you said, the 35% for the CBA, getting back to the pay discrepancies, that's what actually mm-hmm. we're talking about. That 35%, I think that's a good number. I want to settle in somewhere between 35 and 40. Just to more compete with the overseas. I mean, Brittany Griner, makes $113,500, this year, highest paid. She makes close to $1 million playing in Russia.
It's ridiculous.
Griner said herself, like, this needs to be changed or else these girls are just, they're not going to play for the WNBA and they're just going to play overseas and rest during the WNBA season because besides legacy, they're not getting paid. I mean, it's unfortunate and it needs to change. And like you said, they can opt out next year or at the end of this year. And I hope they do. And I hope that they take a big stand and get a bigger a revenue share. I mean, 50% to 20%, that's the big discrepancy. The NBA, like you said, brings around $7-8 billion. So all these rich, pompous owners and things like that, they still make millions and millions of dollars or billions of dollars. And so they don't care that half of it goes to the players. 50 to 60 million, yeah, that's a little tougher to give half away.
Mm-hmm.
And still be a rich, pompous owner. But I don't think giving away 40% is unreasonable, considering that these are athletes doing all the work that makes you whatever amount of money it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll get 40% or anywhere near that renegotiating this current CBA, which is why I said like trying to get into the 30 to 35% range would be great right now.
Yeah.
But moving forward in the future, they definitely deserve at least 40%, especially if the league continues to grow.
I 100% agree. 30 probably more realistic number. I guess I was just jumping ahead of step, and going right where I think it should be. But yeah, anyway, good talk on that. Kind of got our opinions. We'll do a little update on the WNBA playoffs right now. It's in the semifinals. The Atlanta Dream took game 3 in Washington today, and they are up 2-1 in the series. They won 81-76 today. And shout out Seattle. The Storm were up 2-1 after 2 home games. They won both by a score of 91-87. Game 2 is actually quite a thriller. The Mercury came back from down 17 and tied it up on guard Diana Taurasi,
the
3-pointer, to cap off that 17-point comeback and send it to overtime. But the Storm stayed calm. Sue Bird scored the go-ahead bucket with 1:03 left and iced the game with a couple free throws late to give the Storm that 2-0 lead. Unfortunately for the Seattle Lights, The Mercury took game three, 86-66, after a monster fourth quarter tonight.
Yeah, well, hopefully the Seattle Storm will be able to pull through for us, since that's the only team in Seattle that has any shot at winning anything right now.
Look, dude, Mariners are only down 5-6 yeah. to the A's right now, I think.
Yeah. Hopefully they make the playoffs. But moving forward, our last topic of this week's podcast, we got Manu Ginobili retiring at the age of 41 from the San Antonio Spurs, where he spent his whole career. So I'll let Jake take the intro on this topic. So let's get into it.
Manu's an excellent player, NBA legend. I don't have a ton on numbers for Manu and things like that, but I mean, what we kind of wanted to get into a little bit is his Hall of Fame resume. And numbers aside, Manu Ginobili was an incredible leader. He's always calm in the clutch for the Spurs, especially when James Harden's trying to hit go-ahead buckets in the final minutes of the playoffs, and he just wants to block that fool straight home, and then they make funny videos about it, and I gotta cry because I'm a Rockets fan. But Manu's an incredible player. He's four-time NBA champion, played for 22 years. That's insane longevity in the NBA or any sport. So one number I guess I do have is he has the fourth highest plus-minus in the league. Over his 22-year career, despite only playing 60% of the minutes that the top three have, which are Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki, and LeBron James. And I know plus-minus isn't like a huge stat and of any means, because it shows more how the team does when you're on the court, I guess, than anything else. But that's a stat in itself. The team is doing well when he's on the court, and any stat to be in the same conversation with Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki, and LeBron James. I'm sorry, that's a Hall of Famer to me.
Yeah, I guess the only thing holding me back is his face value numbers. He averages on his career 13 points a game and around 3 rebounds and 3 assists, I believe. So that's really the only thing holding me back and making me shy away from saying he's a Hall of Famer, like a no doubt Hall of Famer. Personally, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. Not first ballot, but definitely he'll be in there. And it's just his obviously his four titles and being the third piece of the Spurs' big three, even though he is coming off the bench and being the sixth man, he still held it down and came through for them and made big things happen. Kept it calm, cool, collective. And was an essential piece to those championships. Like, without him, they don't win all those. So I definitely think he'll get in, just not first ballot or anything like that.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you on that. I mean, numbers play a huge role in voting in any process. So, I mean, for that, he's probably – I don't want to say probably not, because I do think he is the first ballot, but he just probably won't because of his face value numbers. And you talk his, like, those face value numbers, 13 points a game and things like that. If I'm a voter, I have to sit there and realize that that's not because Manu Ginobili couldn't have put up 20 a game. Mm-hmm. Like, he chose to take a bench role significantly early in his career.
Yeah.
As well as he played into his late 40s, Manu Ginobili could have probably gone and started on some team into his mid-30s, averaged 15 to 20 plus a game, maybe not 20 plus, but 15 plus at least a game, and put up significantly better numbers, but he sacrificed those minutes to stay with the Spurs and build those championships. And you said it yourself, he was a vital part, and I agree. Without Manu, I don't know if the Spurs dynasty is as legendary as it is. I think Tim Duncan and Tony Parker are still great guys that carry your team, but Manu was the heart and soul of a lot of those championship teams.
Yeah, definitely. And luckily, it's the Basketball Hall of Fame, not the NBA Hall of Fame. So the guidelines and what you need to do to get in is the bar is set a lot lower than it is for other Hall of Fames. for other sports leagues. So he's definitely going to get in. And I guess I wouldn't be shocked if he is first ballot, but I don't really see that happening.
Does the basketball, because it's separate, does it include international play?
Yeah, it includes international play, college play. I don't know if it includes WNBA. I'm not 100% sure on that, but.
Oh yeah, because he's got a EuroLeague championship and a EuroLeague MVP. I'm pretty sure too. So I mean that helps him out a little bit. But yeah, definitely Hall of Famer. Just don't know if it's first ballot.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. You were listening to Big Red and
Big Ant. Is that what it is?
It's big average. Big average Ant. I don't know. But thanks for listening, guys. Stay tuned for next week. We don't really have a preview right now, but it's going to be some good stuff. So have a good one, guys.
Yeah. See you later.